Hello and welcome back to the Bring Mick podcast.
Hi.
Okay, now I'm not going to introduce the topic. I did say we're going to talk about what we'd watched recently. What was you watched recently, boy?
Silly. Well, I've started watching The Office.
The American. Which one?
Okay. Cool. I've seen the British one quite a few times. And
yeah, it's quite good. Quite good.
But talking about film specifically, I watched Godzilla versus Kong, and it's quite good fun, that film.
And he's reviewed it as well, so check him out.
I did.
Can you do a Godzilla impression, Tom?
Hey, King Kong, what are you doing, man?
What?
Was that a Mexican Jamaican?
No, I tried to do like a New York gangster. But it didn't go very well. You know Godzilla's from New York. Short answer, no.
You should have just gone. Ah!
Yeah, I know, but I thought that would have been too obvious. So I tried to make it. He speaks an awful lot in this film. He speaks quite. No, not really. But yeah, no, it's good fun. You should watch it.
Right. Well, what have you been watching?
That's a cracking start. I watched Free Fire this week, which was directed by Ben Wheatley. He's done a couple of his British director. He's done a couple of interesting projects, but this was like a sort of homage to Reservoir Dogs. It's like a gun. They're doing like a gun deal. They're doing a gun deal in like a warehouse in Chicago, and basically, they start having an argument. It turns into a gunfight. It's good. It's got like quite a good cast. It's Cillian Murphy, Armie Hammer. Although Armie Hammer's dodgy recently, so
good actor.
Brie Larson.
Brie Larson's in it. Yep, Brie Larson is in it. And the guy that's on Taskmaster's in it as well. I can't remember his name. He's a really big, bold guy.
Greg Dayton. Oh.
No.
I was going to say Richard Ayoade. He's not bold.
You're right. He isn't.
He's got an awful lot of hair.
Yeah, it's good. I definitely recommend it. It's good fun.
And I've been watching Mindhunter. Well, I've watched the first season of Mindhunter. I finished it last night. It was very, very good. Wouldn't recommend to anyone under 18.
It was very, very good. Wouldn't recommend it, though.
Oh, no. I would in general, but it is very disturbing.
What if you're 17 and a half? Can you watch it then?
I think ask your mum at that point.
What if your birthday's tomorrow and you don't want to wait?
My answer's not going to change, probably. From It's not going to be like 17 and a half, ask your mum a day before. Oh, actually, probably not mature enough. But, you know, you have got to judge it on how well you separate reality from TV, I suppose. But anyway, today's topic... I did say last week it might be something more in-depth or analytical, quite possibly.
Or smarty.
Yeah, and I've been looking forward to this because I'm a big nerd over this sort of thing, and it's music and film. I've been wanting to do this sort of thing for a while because I've always, there's been certain, especially recently, last year or so, when I've been watching stuff, I've generally noticed film scores in the background, and I've been like trying to talk about them with other people, and you know, a lot of people are more passionate about it as I am. So you know, I thought give us a little bit of time to get some examples up and have a little chat about all of our sort of favourite usage of film scores in movie scenes
or just game music scenes. In general. Doesn't have to be a score.
Perhaps.
I have a good idea of one of the films Tom might have put in for his.
You know. Yeah.
I was saying, I've just got a hunch.
What?
But I'm quiet. I'll be quiet.
I bet there's some percussion somewhere.
I think you might be very, very right.
That's good. I'm glad.
Are we right, though?
You know, I've even got a film where there's no music at all.
Oh, a silent film?
No. Silent films tend to have music just over the top.
Not truly silent films.
Not just on mute.
Oh no,
we're talking about the genre.
Yeah, what do you mean the genre? You meant literally silent films.
Films that have no noise.
Those things exist as well.
Yeah, they do.
Right. Well, like A Quiet Place. Oh, actually, no, that, no, I think that probably does have music.
That has music.
We're, yeah, we're naming a lot of silent things aren't silent, really.
You know, I do have a film that doesn't have music, you know? And I think what, it works.
Have you done that
I think
thing?
No, because I think if we're talking about music, it's good to talk
You've
about...
You've misread the brief.
No, I think it's good to also talk about how a film without a score, how that can affect it as well.
Okay. Controversial.
Yeah, no.
Fair enough.
Thanks for that, Tom.
You're welcome.
Should we mosey on?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought Tom was going to have something else other than...
No, that was me submitting to you.
Our sound makes emotion.
who wants to go first? Who wants to bring up an example?
I don't think I will go first. I'll let one of you go first.
Okay.
I'll go first. Oh, no. Go on, Tom.
No, I was just saying the way Henry said it. I was like, oh, okay.
All right. I've got one for... I don't think Henry's going to have seen, but I think you've seen, Tom. Mm. At the end of The Graduate, I think it's The Graduate. I saw scene earlier. When
have you only seen the scene, or have you?
I've only seen the scene. I haven't seen it. But it's when the bus is moving away and the Sound of Silence is playing, and it's zooming in on them, and you can sort of see like the emotion that's conveyed by the music is regret and that they've made a mistake. I think it's one of the best ways they've conveyed that in a film. Yeah. You can just sort of see as the song plays. Dustin Hoffman, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
His smile is sort of slowly starting to fade, and then you hear the "Hello, darkness, my old friend."
Yeah, for context for anyone who hasn't seen it, and Henry, basically, the film involves around Dustin Hoffman's character having an affair with a married woman, and then he falls in love with that married woman's daughter. Oh, and then God. The daughter goes to get married, and he jumps into like the church and goes, no, come with me. And then she runs away with him. And then they're on the bus, all happy and smiling. And then slowly their faces turn to frowns, and they're sort of like, they don't say anything, but you can tell they're like, oh no. Why did we do this?
Yeah.
And that Simon and Garfunkel do the music for the whole film. That's where the married woman in it is Mrs. Robinson. And that's where the song comes from.
Oh.
Here's to you. I like that song.
Yeah, so
it's a good song.
And then "Hello, Darkness, My Old Friend" has just become a bit of a meme, but that was like the first, like, real use of it. And it,
I'm a big fan of that kind of thing of like of using one artist for the entire film.
Yeah,
or like you know, like how they did that for like Mamma Mia.
It's not like just even like having one composer make a score. Like actually having like a band or something do it. I quite like that.
Like Linkin Park for Transformers 3.
It's not the first example I would have thought of.
just thought of it straight away. Sorry.
When I started thinking about examples for this, the first thing that came into it wasn't the first thing that came to my head, but it was a scene that came across. It came across like my YouTube recommendations, and it sort of spurred me on to think, oh, okay, I need to start thinking of examples. It was the Gladiator scene. I say the Gladiator scene. There was a lot of good pieces.
One scene in Gladiator.
No, but like, to be fair, though, I reckon a lot of people who've seen, who say Gladiator is their favourite film, probably know what scene. Well, actually, I don't know. No, the most iconic scene is probably where he turns around and goes, like,
my name is Maximus Decimus Meridius.
Yeah, exactly.
Leader of the five armies, father to a murdered son, husband to a murdered wife.
We've done this before, haven't we? Whole monologue.
I love the monologue, and I like Greg Davies doing it in a in a Chris Eubank impression.
Right, you have to do that now, Tom.
No,
he didn't do it, did he? No, you sound like Chris Eubank, Tom.
What?
I was just thinking you sounded naturally like Chris Eubank.
What, just in general? Very similar.
I'm changing my mind a bit here.
Leader to the five armies.
See, now you sound like Chris Eubank. Right, let's stop.
My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius.
Let's stop, because I listened back to these bits and they're really grinding. Right. Okay, the example I was thinking of was when, you know, when he's like, Okay, well, I know it's a 2000s film, but spoilers, when he dies, Maximus, there's Now We Are Free, the score is called, and it's the one that plays as he's kind of like dying, and his once wife, I suppose, I don't know if they're still married, but the once wife is just kneeling by him, and it's like a really emotional scene, and then he pitches back and it's like, who will help me carry him and stuff like that. And the song that plays in that scene, I've got on my scores music playlist on YouTube, because it is one of my favorite scores, even though it's not like a nostalgic film for me, because I watched it the first time in second year. It's not a nostalgic film at all, but I really love the music. I think the music was nostalgic, actually, but the film wasn't. So, But no, can you imagine which scene I'm talking about?
The scene you're talking about, and I've seen that film maybe three times, but I cannot for the life of me remember the music.
Yeah.
We'll probably be doing a lot of like YouTubing after this.
Yeah.
Trying to remember like these bits, but yeah, no, it was very good. It was like, I can't remember. It sounded like, it was very alternate music. Mm. Like it wasn't like the typical like strings and stuff. I think it's Hans Zimmer. I should probably say that. I mean, I didn't actually research all of the composers for this, which I definitely should have done, but I think this one's Hans Zimmer. And obviously the big battle is between John Williams and Hans Zimmer for who the best composer is, in my opinion, film composer.
I like Danny Elfman.
Yeah, again, apart from those two, I just don't know my composers, and Howard Shore as well. But I don't know my composers, but I very much respect the music. But yeah, that was my go-to example, because it was the first one I thought of while I was doing like the prep for this.
That's my segue into my my first choice. Yeah.
Wow. Like that.
Well, we need more of that.
Lord of the Rings. That was the you said we should do this. That was okay. I'll be honest. It was actually my second first thought. But it was. Speaking of like a score, I think that was my first one because there's so many.
Yeah, I didn't even bother naming them all.
There's so many great songs in there.
What, from Lord of the Rings?
Yeah, one specifically.
What, so like a favourite?
Just like the went with a scene. It was, you know, when the Black Riders are coming out in The Fellowship of the Ring? And I can't remember exactly how it goes, but there's such a sense of like dread and fear that goes with it. I thought it was pretty perfect for the moment. Like when they're running out, it makes them feel like they're to be feared. They're like these warriors that you're sending out to, you know, get the job done.
Yeah, no, I do remember the vibe. I kind of remember the music, but I don't remember it like extremely well. I think they used like roughly the same orchestra for most of the music.
I feel like it's on the tip of my tongue, but then in my head it keeps going to one of the Star Wars ones.
I keep trying to think of it, and every time I do it, it goes to the Spider-Man 3 black suit Spider-Man theme song.
Oh, I mean, partial segue. That is unreal. That's cool.
Good one, yeah.
I remember that being a huge moment watching that scene. I think I watched it in the cinema.
I think I did as well. I think it would have been the only one of the three I saw in a cinema, or the only one I was old enough to see, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
Also, speaking of Lord of the Rings, the end of Return of the King, I think I spoke to Henry about this. I don't remember if it was in a podcast or just in conversation, but there's an Annie Lennox song, which I am a very big fan of.
This is the one that he sings, isn't it?
Something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a very good song. Like, and it's not, it fits the like tone of this film, but it's weird to have that just come out of nowhere with lyrics when none of the other like songs had lyrics.
Yeah.
It's very good. It's Into the West. Even if you don't like Lord of the Rings, I think you should listen to it because it's quite a good song.
I think I remember, actually, it might genuinely be the first scene which made me get all into film scores and music.
The first scene ever.
The first scene that I watched, which made me get into film scores, I probably was already into them anyway. But in terms of really noticing music and scenes, it was maybe the one that got me into it. It was the Theoden King moment where the scene where Gandalf frees Theoden from his spell under Saruman, and he's got Grievous Wormtongue beside him, and he says, "You have no power here," and then he releases him from the spell, and then the music just switches, the key just changes straight away into it's all fearful and horrible, and then it was all like epic suddenly. It was like no, it was the Theoden King theme. It's different. I can't really.
I actually watched these films literally like a month ago. I should probably remember.
It was like when he said, "Oh, your fingers may feel stronger when grasping their sword," or something like that.
I know what scene you're talking about.
But I just love that music because it was so epic, and it switched like during the scene. Like it didn't stop and then start; it just switched tone completely. And it's like that sort of music that you know was created for those scenes, rather than vice versa. You know, it wasn't just a song they put over the top and they had to start line it up so the notes went at just the right time. You know, it was made for that kind of scene, which just makes it better. Because I listen to that music and I imagine that scene as well unfolding.
I remember watching a video on like music and like film composed for, no, music composed for films. And I think one thing that makes films like Lord of the Rings or like Indiana Jones stand out even more is like how original they are, because I saw something that was like half the time with films, they haven't got music sorted. So when they're editing and rewatching scenes, they put in filler music, which is from different films or just like normal songs. And then by the time it comes to actually compose the music, the director has watched it so many times with the filler music that they're saying, "I like it with that. So can you just make a music that sort of sounds like that?" So like the composers never really, like half the time they don't really get to make their actual music or what they want to do, because it's the director just says, "Can you basically copy the filler music?" And I think stuff like that makes Lord of the Rings, Jurassic Park, Jaws that much more impressive and memorable, because you're actually just like, because it's so original and sets itself apart from the others.
Yeah. I was just wanted, just before we moved on from Lord of the Rings, I thought the piece of music that I put like a bunch above the others from that is the Shire music. Like they call it the sound of the Shire. I don't think there's any of them that comes close to that in terms of like the vibe they were trying to create. I remember I saw someone on TikTok like sort of reenacting, like imagining that song was being pitched for them. Like imagining, I don't know, like Peter Jackson was getting a pitch that music for like, okay, this is going to play when we're in the Shire, okay, with the hobbits. And it was just perfect. And it was that moment where it was all like joyous and buoyant at the start. And then it just built up and it was just strings playing. And it was just so, so appropriate.
I find that song especially is so relaxing. Yeah. I used to just listen to that sometimes, just sitting in my bed. If I had a tough day at school or something, sit down in my ears, with that in my ears, and just relax.
I mean, I would
like to relax.
Yeah. If I had Spotify back in school time, I probably would have done that too.
Yeah,
I think my brother used to have the soundtrack.
I should probably also say that I think The Hobbit. Actually, I don't know if matched is fair, but it was definitely on the same level, in my opinion, the music in The Hobbit. I thought it was just as good.
I don't remember the music in The Hobbit, to be honest.
Didn't they reuse some of it? Am I wrong there?
I mean,
they would have like reused like the concerning hobbits and like.
I mean, like the Misty Mountain song and.
Oh yeah, I love that.
Yeah,
the Ed Sheeran one or the other one.
Oh no, that's I See
I
Fire.
That's actually quite a good song.
I like that song too.
I'm not a massive Ed Sheeran fan overall, but that's quite a good song.
There was it's called roast. I mentioned it before, and you couldn't believe it's called roast mutton. the scenes where the hobbits go into battle, and I think they only used it for the first film, which is ridiculous because it was such an amazing score. And it was basically Misty Mountains, but it was, I think it was sped way up, and it was used with like trumpets and oboes and all that kind of stuff. You know, like,
yeah, like, those films, they fit it quite well, because those films are obviously more focused around dwarfs than Lord of the Rings.
Yeah,
and they sort of get that like Viking dwarf sort of tone in, and they put it into the music, and it works very well.
Yeah, I love the Hobbit films. I think they got a worse rap than the Lord of the Rings films, but I love them.
I don't want to finish. I
think
Five Armies, I couldn't get into it.
I think it would have been much better if it had just been one film. Yeah.
No, you know, the book is like 200 pages.
Yeah. I've read it. They put it into three.
Yeah, they made three films out of it. It's mental.
That's a conversation for a different podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think maybe too many characters involved. It should have maybe just been one journey. But it had to be surely it'd have been a really long film, even if we're talking about cutting all of this.
Yeah, I think there's an incredible amount of stuff they could have cut.
Well, you know, they loads of scenes in that they just added that weren't in the book. Yeah. Like, you know, the big evil orc enemy that was chasing them on wargs in the first film.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name, but he's not in the book at all. They just made him up.
For the film. The CGI they use for them is not great.
Yeah,
I don't know why they wouldn't just do makeup like they did in the first. Again,
I'm just looking through my examples here, thinking which ones I need to cut. Ironically,
to be fair, never mind. I've got four that I would like to speak about.
I've got two, maybe three, but yeah.
First, I want to talk about a genre as a whole, which I think uses music very effectively, but I've got one specific film from that, and I know both of you will appreciate it too. So horror, I think one of the, like, it's because it's everything. I remember one of our music teachers or something, it's probably bollocks, but they used to say horror music is so important, because one time I watched a horror film and it was on mute and I didn't find it scary, and then I watched it again without mute and it was scary. It's probably bollocks. But music is very important in horror films, and I think the 28 Days Later theme absolute favorite.
Was it made for that film?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, that is...
But that is my... not even just horror as a genre. That is probably one of my absolute favorite scores of any film.
That's got really deep guitar on it, hasn't it?
Yeah.
From what I can remember, yeah.
I found it really strange how that makes me feel, because it's not like fast strings or anything like that.
It's just a really slow piano to start off with, and then it starts building up. It's just so good.
It's scary, isn't it? That still gives me like a nostalgic terror from when we watched that for the first time.
You know what? Like the way it was used in the second film, I actually thought was slightly better. Because they used that theme in the start of the Weeks Later, didn't they? In the house scene.
I think it was more effective in the first film, but it's definitely works in the second one, because the 28 days and weeks have a sort of aliens thing going on, where the first one is sort of just outright horror, and then the second one moves into a more sort of action.
Mm.
Like, it's still got horror elements, but it's more sort of action. And I think that song works better in an outright horror than it does.
But I would say in the particular scenes, there's something about that music where I think if it would... A lot of the time, music tries to match the action. So if it's like a fast scene, it would be fast music. I mean, that's kind of common sense. But like with this, it's like... I feel like the fact that it's really slow, even through bits that are like ridiculously fast moving, like sort of like life flashing before your eyes moments, especially like in the second one, like it literally goes straight into like fast adrenaline packed action.
Yeah.
And yet the music is just hanging there, like sort of slightly quiet really slow. And what that makes me feel like is that it's like a foregone conclusion. There's no tension. It's people are doomed here. That's why the music is staying slow, because it is like a, it's like it's narrating a tragic event rather than it sort of aligning with what's happening. It's more like it's just sort of poignant and just sad and like just watching something unfold, if you know what I mean by that.
I think the bit in, actually it is in the second film, but I really like how it works with it. So, you know, when Robert Carlyle's character is like kissing his wife who's immune.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then is that the music that plays there as he turns?
I'm not sure.
Because I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, never mind then. But that bit's very good.
It is good. It might have been like a similar tune.
Yeah.
Mm.
But I don't think it was that exact music, no.
This has sparked a thoughtful one that I didn't think of before. I don't know if you've got it down, Henry. The soundtrack to Sinister.
Do you mean the multiple soundtracks?
Specifically the sound that plays over the top when he's first watching the tapes. It's like the sort of Arabic, like screamy sort of song. I don't know how to describe it really, but I remember watching it for the first time and that making it 100 times more scary. And like sort of feeling like you still get that sort of feeling of sickness.
I need to rewatch those scenes because they are horrifying. I swear to God, I haven't rewatched any of them because I'm so like, I was so disturbed by them, whether it was the music or both of the factors.
It's sort of like PTSD, isn't it? It makes you think of the kid going over the top with the lawnmower and stuff like that. It's horrid.
I think The Shining has a similar effect to that. I remember
The Shining.
I remember The Shining. Like, I was watching the sort of the tense scenes and thinking, yeah, it's quite scary. But the music was so jarring that it just landed me in this like sort of feeling of panic that I just wouldn't have been in without it.
Mm.
Like, it was just like, it was so random and disjointed. And like, there was just a random screech every so often. Like, there was no rhythm whatsoever. Well, it didn't feel like there was anyway.
Yeah. I think the first It film does that very well as well. Just the score in that. And the sort of like manic laughing that they place into the score sometimes as well.
Mm.
You could talk about music in horror for like hours, like with Halloween as well.
Mm.
There's a lot of iconic.
Oh, that is so iconic, the Halloween theme.
Jaws as well. I'm counting Jaws as a horror because it basically is. But that is like one of the most iconic ones.
I think I mentioned this before. I can't remember. I don't know if I mentioned it on the podcast or whether it was on a written review. But I remember when I watched Halloween, the recent one, that starting scene, which was already really tense, and there was a bit where he yelled, "Michael!" And then the music just absolutely slammed in with the title. Like Halloween, and I remember that scene being unreal. Like, I got adrenaline. Like, I remember watching that scene before I watched the film, and I got like absolute adrenaline from seeing that scene on just on YouTube, because it's such a cool way to introduce a title sequence. Just like almost interrupt the scene with sudden music and the sudden title sequence. Like, all iconic.
I saw that recent one in the cinema at uni, and bloody hell, like. With it completely surrounding you as well, it's very impactful.
Mm. Yeah, I didn't even note anything like this down. So this is actually a bit of a
it's off the top of the brain.
Yeah, I feel like there's stuff here that I got. Did I say the Dark Knight Cafe scene?
You have.
Have I mentioned that on the podcast? Like, I mean, before.
Oh. Yeah, you have. I think.
Okay. So. Yeah, I won't mention that again. Then, like, everyone knows how much I like that scene and how the timing of the certain. Like bits, but there's just stuff I have to mention. I think while we're on horror, I'll mention Demon Slayer because I watched that recently. That was like, that's like anime. I watched that because I think I got recommended it. I watched One Punch Man and I was like, I'm just gonna watch some popular anime. And it was like 25 episodes this first season of Demon Slayer. I don't know if there is another season or if it's even on Netflix or anything. But there was a demon, the Demon Slayer, the demon theme. of that, which you can just Google Demon Slayer Demon Theme if you want to look that up. The theme is like a, again, like Rory said, the Arabic music. It's similar in that it's like very, like it's a very sort of, just like you wouldn't hear that kind of music in like mainstream music. It was just like weird, eerie vocals, and the vibe it created, the demon music, was unbelievable. I think half the reason I really like this series, I think I probably would have given it a much lower rating if the music just wasn't on point. Like the post-production in Demon Slayer was unbelievable. There's a specific scene, if we're talking about specific scenes, where there's like a finale, like a sort of a boss battle that is typically deemed to be absolutely impossible. Like they layer the hell out of it. It's like, oh, this doesn't work. This doesn't work. Oh, it's going well. Oh, but this doesn't work. You know, that kind of thing. There was like one of those scenes. And in the inverse to how I was talking about 28 weeks later being like a foregone conclusion, they did a similar thing with Demon Slayer, but in the opposite way. And that's that they did like some really, really joyous, like epic, like music.
Yeah.
During that sort of boss battle, to the point that you were like, oh, so he's definitely going to succeed then, because it started before he even like swung his sword, even kind of, you know what I mean? And I just remember thinking, like, in theory, that sounds like ridiculous. It sounds like how on earth are you going to enjoy a scene if it's like immediately joyous music and it's like you know how the outcome's going to be. But I think what made it really good is that you enjoyed stuff unfolding, because there were still layers. There was still all this happening and then this happening and then this happening. But it was just, I don't know, it was just really interesting. It was just a really fun way of doing it. Like it was proper nice music. Like it was like a really nice way to end something that had been quite tense and quite gothic and quite horrible.
Mm.
Yeah.
I can't really describe it. I'd say watch that scene. So it's like, well, I'd say watch Demon Slayer in general, but if you aren't going to, then it's like the Demon Slayer like final battle,
yeah,
I guess you call it. But yeah, that stuck with me quite a lot. But yeah,
I mean, speaking of anime, I've only watched two episodes of this, but the Attack on Titan has the theme song for that is very.
I'd be to watch that.
What I've watched the first season of that.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? Like the thing they do in the intro?
The opening credits sort of.
I thought that was like what they usually do with anime, where they do like a weird sort of pop punk song. Is it not?
Yeah, I mean, I can't lie. I haven't watched an incredible amount of anime, but I do think it happens in quite a lot of them. I just really like the Attack on Titan one.
Oh, fair enough.
Personally,
fair play.
Yeah.
Anyone got one they have to mention?
Well, I can take one that I would like to. I can take us back off horror quickly. Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
The one where they first, well, you know, when they're coming up in the jeeps in the first one and they first see that Brachiosaurus and you hear I feel like that's just like an all-time sort of music score for me, because
iconic.
When I watched it as a kid, I felt like I had, because I loved dinosaurs when I was a kid. I used to watch Walking with Dinosaurs all the time. But when you hear that theme and then you see the dinosaur come in, you get the same sense of like astonishment and awe that I feel like the characters get in that scene. You're like, whoa, okay, there is dinosaurs here. That's sick. How big is that?
It was probably quite genuine for the audience as well, because of the leap in like CGI.
Yeah, they look so good in that. That film's what, 94, 95, something like that.
Still holds up.
Yeah, it looks so good.
Yeah.
That was one of the ones I noted down. Also, little trivia, in the third Jurassic Park film, there's a kid who has a Brachiosaurus toy, which is the exact same toy that I had. Well, obviously not the exact same one, but like the same like exact design in that.
Pretty cool
for everyone, yeah. Jurassic Park is one of the most, like, every time they do like quizzes or like a round on a quiz where it's like name this film score, you can guarantee that Jurassic Park's going to be in it.
Yeah, I think
it's easy. Ones.
I noted down that it gave me the same feeling as when something ran at me for the first time in 3D.
Although, when something ran at me for the first time.
I remember going to see a... We went to like a Pharaoh exhibition, me and my mum, in like year six or something. And we watched some Egyptian Pharaoh documentary in 3D at the O2. And to be honest, I don't remember much about the documentary other than this bit where like this Sphinx ran out at my face. I remember being like, oh my God. It was astonishment. And I think I got the same thing from when the dinosaur came out for the first time. I thought it'd be a fun analogy.
I think I watched Avatar in 3D and I don't remember being that madly impressed.
Joe, I think, Mr. Hard to Impress,
Henry.
That is his nickname. It wore off after, to be fair, 3D. Mm. But the first time I saw it, I found that really cool.
3D was born and died very quickly.
Yeah.
Mm. They still do it in cinemas, though, don't they?
Yeah, but I feel like not many people... if I was going to choose, I'd just choose a normal one.
Definitely.
And at least they don't have those... blue and red glasses anymore.
Wait, Tom, do you have to wear
glasses? I wear the glasses over them. Yes, I do.
I always wondered about that.
Luckily,
they're
quite big, so they fit quite well over my normal glasses. But yes, I do have to do that, which is also partly reason why I would rather just see a normal one.
Has anyone ever called you Six Eyes?
No, I don't think anyone's... I can't remember the last time anyone called me Four Eyes, to be honest.
Well, I was wondering, you know Cyclops?
What, the thing with one eye or the thing from X-Men?
From X-Men.
Okay, yeah.
What would happen if he was short-sighted? Would he just have glasses constantly breaking?
Maybe he could get, prescription red visors.
Visors, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to do that.
Maybe part of his mutant power is that because of his laser eyes, he has perfect vision.
Yeah, but that just seems like a reach, Tom. Come on.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It'd be useful, to be fair.
Get back to reality, Tom.
You can't bend the laws of physics that much in a mutant comic.
No, but you're just making assumptions, Tom.
I'm making assumptions.
Has anyone got any more examples?
Yeah, I want to mention a style of music, I guess. Mainly what we talked about is diegetic.
Mm-hmm.
No, what we've talked about is non-diegetic, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I think diegetic I think talking about musicals as well, and films Whiplash, I don't know.
there he is.
But... two main films I'd put down for this. One of them is Inside Llewyn Davis, which is
that's a good film.
Very good Coen Brothers film.
What's the other one?
I'll get to that. Don't worry. Don't worry. <about that. laughs> But Inside Llewyn Davis, yeah. So it's I'd class it as a musical because it's not in the sense of a musical where they're just doing normal stuff and then they burst out into song and dance randomly, but it's Oscar Isaac plays a struggling folk singer in the 50s or 60s, I don't know, and it's basically just, it's not like one of those films where there's a massive story, it's just a day in the life sort of film, but throughout he just sits down with his guitar and plays these folk songs, probably 8 of them throughout the film, and it really enhanced my enjoyment of the film because they're actual good songs and he's a good musician. And I think if you're going to like a musical, you're going to have to like the film, not like the music. It's not really about what's happening. It's about the songs, the things that stick in your head. And I think that's very important for a musical, is to have songs that people will listen to. And that's just a good example of a musical that's different because it's folks music. It's usually La La Land and Lord, all of that. That's very good.
I do wonder what TV series I actually kind of overrate in my head slightly because of how amazing the scores were.
Yeah.
Because Merlin, for instance, when I watched that when I was young, I loved Merlin obviously when I was younger, especially the fact it was Freeview. I watched it in the evenings rather than having to get Netflix up and all that rubbish that I really don't. I definitely prefer that, the idea of watching it in the evening on Freeview telly than I do how we do it now. I suppose there's more options now, but it's still like it does kind of link in with that nostalgic time where you could just watch stuff in the evenings. But what I remember about Merlin is that I think every single piece of music they had in that show was just spot on. Like every piece of music for every scene, there was very consistent themes in that show. For example, with like Arthur and Gwen, and then there was just the main theme tune. And then there was a couple of like one-off pieces of music that you never heard again. And I just think every single one just hit the absolute button. I remember one where, like, spoilers if you haven't watched Merlin, if you only plan to, but when Lancelot dies for like the second time, there's a piece of music that plays when Merlin is like silently giving him his funeral by himself, because he's like he kind of dies as like not like a traitor but kind of like a disgrace, but it was because he was being controlled. And he floats off, and the music that plays, it goes from sort of quiet and sort of like regretful to like blaring loud and emotional, and it's like a proper hard hitting scene. And it like especially so for like fans, because he's like an OG as well, like he's like an OG character. But no, like if you love music scores and you love stuff for music scores, then Merlin is a great one to sort of like watch back and forget what I just said. But yeah,
no, fair play.
I'm sure they'll do that anyway.
Yeah,
the gang clip.
No, no one dies. No one dies. Everyone lives until season 5, or is it? I don't know how many seasons.
I'm sure some people die. Season 5. That.
Yeah, but yeah, go on.
Yeah, to my final point, because I will hate myself if I don't notice it.
Okay,
if you couldn't notice it, mention it. If you couldn't tell by the inside jokes, I like Whiplash.
What's that all about?
What, the medical condition?
Yeah, I like it. And basically, the thing I like, if there's one thing I really like about Whiplash, is that the music in it is so intrinsically linked with the editing. And it's to the point where the music is so overbearing and powerful that it starts to dominate the editing style of the film. And I believe it won best editing at the Oscars, which it should have, because the editing is incredible. But the bit at the end, in the last 15 minutes, every hit of the drum cuts to a new shot, and it works beautifully. And
I'm a fan of that sort of thing.
And even if you were, because it's jazz music, and jazz music isn't the most easy to listen to, I don't think. It's sort of, some people can think of it as a bit erratic, and if you don't like the music, I still think you'll enjoy it because of how the music and the editing grip you to the scene.
Yeah.
And then if you do like jazz music, then that's a double, because it's quite good jazz music.
It's probably one of the most intense films I've watched, to be fair. Whiplash. And the way the drums go with the editing, like you were saying, makes it so fast paced when you're actually in the scene that, it gets your adrenaline up big time. So, I agree on that one.
Like, generally, for a film about a drummer in a jazz band, the last 15 minutes are just so tense, and it's just constant for like 15 minutes. You don't get a breath. And it's a mastery of filmmaking, but it's also a mastery of how to put different parts of filmmaking together, editing, the filmmaking, directing, and the score. It's just perfect, basically.
Sounds a bit shit, to be honest.
Join in next week for my next 5-minute discussion of why Whiplash is the greatest film of the 2010s.
Yeah, we're going to have a little segment called Tom's Little Corner, where he talks about Whiplash.
Every week I'll do the next 5 minutes of the film.
Tom's Whiplash Corner.
Yeah. anyone else got any more they want to mention?
I mean, I've got a bunch more, but I won't mention them all. I'll do it based on what Rory says, maybe, if there's one that links closely to that.
I can do one more if you'd like. I'm quite happy to leave it if you want to cut down the thing. I'm happy either way. I've got one more that you might, that's sort of similar to another one, but I'm happy to.
I've looked at the DVD.
You go. Okay. I've got Indiana Jones.
Yeah,
and I went for the classic one, because I feel like it's like one of the best like scores that conveys sort of adventure and excitement.
Who wrote that score?
I think that's John Williams.
John Williams.
I thought it might be John Williams, but it's very different to his regular vibe.
I think George Lucas is pretty.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Always with John Williams. But yeah, it's just. I mean, it's like I feel like it's one of the most memorable musical scores you can find, and I just sort of associate it with sitting watching a film like wide eyed with my mouth open, like, "Well, how's he doing that?" Do you know what I mean? It's such like a hopeful adrenaline rush. Is what I had written down as well, but yeah, that's a big one for me. I'd say Indiana Jones.
I think the thing that made me want to do this podcast episode, and I said like the thing that got me into it originally, but the thing that made me want to sort of revisit this,
I reckon I can guess what you're going to say.
I don't think you will.
Is it Pirates of the Caribbean?
No, I didn't. No, it isn't.
I thought you were going to mention that because you always. I think it's one of your favourites, isn't it?
It is one of my favourites, but I don't necessarily think it's like one of the best examples to just talk about. Yeah. It's an amazing score, and it speaks for itself. I think it's like even... I think the score is like almost better than the film.
Oh,
and no, the film is amazing.
I totally agree.
But, no, the example I was thinking of was because I watched Black Panther recently. And I think for anyone who knows what they're talking about with like film, even if they didn't like Black Panther, I think a lot of people don't like it, but well, not don't like it, but like with Marvel, it's like one of those ones they put a bit lower. It isn't for me. I really like Black Panther, but one of the things that you can't really dispute is how good it looks and how good it sounds. So like all of that sort of immediate senses kind of thing. And
the only Marvel film where they sort of outsourced the soundtrack and the score, because they got like, I think Kendrick Lamar is like the main creative mind behind the score. He got most of the people like working, and he got a lot of it.
I think he did the actual music tracks. I don't know if he did the score.
But like a lot of them, I think a lot of the score is from like
the African. But I mean, like,
I think,
but he didn't. Well, he did
that. He probably didn't compose it, but he probably had a lot of like input into it. But yeah, I think it's like it's the only one other than I guess Guardians of the Galaxy, but those songs were already
I love the Guardians of the Galaxy one as well. But in the Black Panther, if I was picking out a scene, it was a fairly consistent theme in the film, and you probably know what I'm talking about when I mention the sunset scene. When Michael B. Jordan and
Chadwick Boseman.
Yeah, I almost said T'Challa, and I was like, "What? There's no point saying that."
That is his name in the film, so.
Yeah, no, it's just because I said Michael B. Jordan, didn't I? Rather than Killmonger, so I thought, I might as well.
Killmonger's a strange name, anyway. So.
Yeah, it's a made-up name.
All names are made up.
They are.
That's a callback to Infinity War.
Yeah. But anyway,
it's like all words are made up.
That scene, I mean, the visuals are really good anyway. Like, that's like the whole point of the scene. He's going up there for the visuals. But I remember thinking like that the music was like perfect for that, because I remember it like, I remember there being a moment like the music was playing, and then there was a moment of silence as the scene appeared, because there was like a huge landscape, and it just gave you a chance to just stare at that without listening to anything. And then when the music kind of came in, like after it gave you that little beat of just looking at the landscape, the music came in, and I just thought like the timing and the feeling of that. I feel like that score, because it did play quite a lot during the film, I feel like that score was designed for that scene, personally, just the way it was, like the way it fitted like a glove pretty much. Okay. But like, yeah, no, I can't remember where else in the film it played, because there was a lot of themes in that film. Like there was the Killmonger scene, which was very hip, which went completely against the regular like sort of African music was the rest of it. Like the music when Wakanda first appeared as well, that was amazing.
It works. The music works very well. Like, as you said, like when they're like with Black Panther and when they're in Wakanda, the music is more traditionally African. It's more traditionally like with the African drums and everything. And then with Killmonger, because he was Wakandan but raised in an like America, it's sort of a mix of them.
Yeah, it is really cool.
Very smart to do it that way, because it immediately, you don't even have to be looking at the screen. You just hear the music, and you immediately know there's a difference between them.
Mm. Yeah, I'd probably just name my honourable mention. I've got two honourable mentions before I like close off, but I got like the Amadeus music, because they use a lot. There's a lot of Mozart music in that, I suppose. That makes sense, doesn't it? But and then I've got like the Go Tomorrow theme from Haunting of Hill House, which also features in Bly Manor, but I think it worked better in Hill House. I think they used it at better times
when it was scary.
Yeah, yeah. I think those sort of moments of like comic relief and moments of like character building emotion, which make horror films or horror stuff really, really good.
Yeah,
that stuff works probably better when it's scarier.
Yeah,
because you appreciate those moments a bit more as like a sort of a respite. But yeah, those are my two honourable mentions, which I didn't get around to mentioning.
I will mention my one honourable mention, which I realised I talked about at the beginning and then just didn't again. The one with no score, No Country for Old Men.
Ah, right.
Oh, yeah.
It's a film that is very grounded, and I think the lack of a score helps with the tension more.
Mm.
You've got, like, Anton Chigurh? I don't know how to pronounce it. It's bit like the main villain. He's such an interesting character, and he's just completely blank. He's completely blank.
You haven't seen it?
No, I haven't seen it.
Oh, it's a classic.
Yeah, I think the main characters in it are all quite closed off, and like even Josh Brolin, who we're sort of rooting for, he's very closed off, and he doesn't really show anything. And I think the music works well to reflect that.
That
it has no music.
Mm. Yeah. Cool stuff. I'll get around to that.
They don't need school to be effective.
No.
Rory, your honorable mentions?
I have two that I've... Okay. Kingsman, I had.
Mm.
It's the scene when they're in the church and Colin Firth shooting all of those people. It's the screechy guitars that go along with it that I think make it so frenetic and exciting to watch. I just remember it being really memorable.
Do you remember what the music was?
That's another one where the music works really well with the style of camera work, because it's very minimalist editing. It's like one and it works really well together.
Do you remember what the music was?
Yeah, I'm just kind of passively looking it up.
I can't Free remember Bird.
It's called.
Is that what by Lynyrd Skynyrd?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah,
we should have probably played. I don't know if my microphone's good enough to pick up music. I won't try it now. We probably should have played a couple of samples because
we didn't need.
Would have sounded awful. We could have like put them in post, I suppose. But
yeah,
it's Tom lagging for you, by the way.
A tiny bit.
Yeah, you've been lagging for a while, actually.
Well, why didn't you bloody say anything?
Because I didn't know if there was much we could do. But yeah. I can still hear you. It's just like a bit of a...
Ah. Yeah, just every now and then. But it's fine.
Anyway, second honourable mention. We're at the end now anyway, so...
We're in the end game now.
Exactly. What's your other
mention?
Yeah, you had two.
I had Free Fire. They use a John Denver song in that, quite diegetically. So there's this bit where... So there's a van that has all the guns that they're trying to sell in it, and... It's near the end. A lot of people have died, and this guy's trying to escape in it. And as he turns on the engine, the song goes on, and they're sort of having like this firefight. Well, it's a fist fight by the time they do it. This other guy who's half dead like climbs into the car and starts having a punch out with him, and the song's playing in the background. And it's sort of I just sort of noticed how instead of making it like this horrible gory scene, it made it quite funny, and it just completely flipped the scene. In a way that if there was no song there, you'd probably be like, oh, God, these two are going to kill each other. This is horrid. But it made it, exciting to watch and funny.
I just realised I have to mention Baby Driver.
No.
Because that, wait, is that a...
Oh, God.
Right?
I use pre-existing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is unreal for music. I just realized like how well they did that. And it was, and the thing is, it was just general like vibe music, like it was fast in action and all that kind of stuff. But the fact that it was all sort of centered around what he was listening to, and it like that was what made it really good. But
I remember seeing someone on Twitter saying that films like Guardians of the Galaxy or Baby Driver, where they just use songs that are already like well renowned songs, is lazy and it's like doesn't take as much effort. But after watching Suicide Squad, like the old one, I can guarantee you that it's not easy to pick the right songs for a film like that. You can't pick popular songs and expect it to work. You have to pick ones that work towards
the fit.
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
So that's all I have on mentions that way. Yeah. Thanks for coming.
Bye.
As it goes to the BMW podcast, we've been talking about
examples. You tell us on Twitter and Instagram.
Oh, yeah. If you have your own examples, do spew them out.
Yeah.
Be our first comment, maybe.
Yeah.
That'd be that.
Ever.
Yeah. That's all right. Having a nice silent audience. But you can speak if you want.
If you want.
Been very passive aggressive, Henry. I'm not sure they're going to like that.
Well, shall I change this to actual aggressive?
Yes.
Maybe just passive.
Talk!
That was so aggressive, I'm scared.
Grr. Right.
Wrap it up.
I am joking, by the way. Please don't be scared off.
Side of him.
Roar, I didn't mean to scare you.
Me and Rory have seen a few times and it's terrifying.
Horrible.
That is my Godzilla impression, by the way.
When he threw that pan up.
He threw that fan at who?
He threw that pan at our head when he was angry.
Oh, yeah.
Terrifying stuff.
Oh, no, don't take me back.
What the hell? Right, let's go. Right, see you later. Bye.
Let's go.
Bye.
Bye.